Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports at Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. If you guys haven't done so yet and you want to subscribe to the Missy AE podcast, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or you can subscribe at any of our major podcast networks like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Basically, if there's a major podcast network and you can search for podcasts, we're probably on there. We had a lot to get to. We are going to obviously take a look at the landscape of all major sports, including Major League Baseball, which is just beginning their spring training. I believe they're in the opening days of it, if I recall correctly. We will take a look back at the Super Bowl, which just recently took place. This past Sunday night, where the Kansas City Chiefs became the first team since the New England Patriots to successfully defend their Super Bowl championship, and much more. Right now we have Lou and we have Diane on the line with us. How are you doing tonight, Lou and Diane?
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Well, that's good. Well, we got a lot to get to tonight, so I figure we might as well just start out with the Super Bowl, because yeah. Lou, I got to tell you, there was a lot of hype about this year's game. There was, a matter of fact, I believe a lot of people considered it. They thought that we were going to see a high scoring game. And it didn't really look like that at all throughout most of the first half, with San Francisco only having a 7-point lead, 10-3 at halftime. However, though, they suffered what I feel was the big turnaround for Kansas City, which was the loss of Dre Greenlaw to a freak injury. And for those who may not have watched the Super Bowl or may not remember what exactly happened, Dre Greenlaw was running back out onto the field. I believe it was in the second quarter when the San Francisco defense was about to go out, and he ended up tripping and falling over in such a weird way. It turns out that he ended up tearing his Achilles on that one single sprint that he had made. I mean, such a freak injury. And he had been holding Travis Kelce in check for pretty much the majority of the game up to that point. And after that, Kelce pretty much started taking off with Kansas City abusing his replacement, and which I believe was Oren Burks, if I recall correctly. I believe it was Oren Burks who came in to replace Greenlaw. But we did have a few firsts, or not a few firsts, but a few historical things take place. First off, this is the first Super Bowl to go into the new overtime rules for the playoffs, which each team would get a possession, including if one team had scored a touchdown, the other team would have the opportunity on that first possession to match things up and score a touchdown as well. Obviously, we ended up not seeing that happen, with Kansas City ultimately winning with a touchdown after San Francisco opened up the overtime period with a field goal. But I don't know about you, and we have Alex being added on to the line here as well. How you doing, Alex?
Thanks, Steve. Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, bro? How you doing, Steve?
Nothing much. We're just starting up our conversation about the Super Bowl. And what I was about to say is, it really seemed like, you know, San Francisco after that Dre Greenlaw injury. Kansas City, it almost seemed like you were watching a movie play over again. Like you knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And
you
know the script, and you know that as soon as Greenlaw went down, that Kansas City would eventually take over, which they did. Patrick Mahomes, 34 of 46 for 333 yards. Two touchdowns and a pick. He also had 9 carries for 66 yards. And Isaiah Pacheco also had 18 carries for 59 yards for the Kansas City Chiefs. The 49ers, what can I say offensively? They fell back into the trance that doomed Baltimore in the AFC title game, where they basically decided to abandon the run game in the second half after running it down Kansas City's throats all first half. Christian McCaffrey ended up finishing with 22 carries and 80 yards. And aside from him, throughout four other guys, there was a total of about 9 carries between four other rushers. And not to say that maybe some of the play calls on Shanahan's part were terrible, but let's start with you, Lou. Where do you think things went wrong for the 49ers?
I think the Greenlaw is when that really started to turn things around. I mean, and Kansas City's way. So because in a game of this magnitude, one injury can change the whole. Picture the whole outcome of the game. You know, San Francisco, of course, won the conference, and then that one injury, and, hey, weren't the same since. They were lucky none was going to get into overtime, which I thought it would. But, key injuries, they play a very important factor, especially in championship games, and that's what happened. They were lucky
that's
they spent a game out of it.
Yeah, that's true, and not just the injury, but I think what also loomed large was the extra point miss by Jake Moody, which ended up being blocked by Kansas City. I think that loomed large significantly because Kansas City would have needed a touchdown. They would have needed a touchdown towards the end of regulation in order to win, because at that point, there would have been no tying it with a field goal, as San Francisco would have been up by 4. But what about you, Diane? What do you feel is the what do you feel went wrong for San Francisco?
Nothing really. Just the injuries.
Yeah, I guess you could say that the injury was obviously maybe the big focal point of San Francisco, because that really, if anything, that started to open up Kansas City's offense right as soon as Greenlaw suffered that injury. What about you, Alex? I mean, what did you think overall of not just the injury, but also it kind of seemed like San Francisco completely abandoned whatever game plan they had going in following it.
Absolutely, Steve. Great call as always. I mean, it's almost like watching the old Brady days where, hey, if they fumble or if they miss a couple third downs and punt early on, you have to stack as many points as you can on that table because they're hitting 21s later in the day. And it's almost like reminding of the old Patriots or, the Bulls or the Lakers with Kobe. Like, when you have them and they're struggling early on, the Niners should have jumped on them early. I think me, you, Diane, and Lou, and everyone and their brother probably saw the same thing about just the Niners looked like the better team for the first half at least, the Niners looked like they were in control. And you have to get points on the board because you know Mahomes is going to wake up just like Brady used to do, just like Jordan and Kobe. Like, you got to build a lead early because if you keep them hanging around, you're going to pay the price. You're going to lose at the end. I thought the Niners firmly were in control for the first half. I mean, wake me up the next time you see the Chiefs. They, what, fumbled four times? I mean, the Niners, I wish the Chiefs pulled that crap in the Super Bowl against the Eagles. I mean, the Niners, like, could not get out of their own way. They couldn't score points when they had the chance. And then Mahomes was Mahomes at the end. Yeah, I mean, I thought the Niners had it. And then the Chiefs just, you know, if you keep them hanging around, they'll gladly take another ring.
Yep. And, you know, another thing that comes to mind, too, was off of the kickoff, what basically it was one of those freak incidents where the ball ended up going off of the leg of one of the other 49er players. And then
he
didn't even realize it. Then his teammate tries to grab it. He ends up fumbling that, and then Kansas City immediately jumped all over it. I mean, it was just, to me, I mean, obviously that's not the real reason why they lost, but, you know, it's a big factor. It seemed like the injury and that freak moment, because we know in every Super Bowl, there always seems to be one freak moment that always happens. Like, for example, Odell Beckham Jr. with the helmet catch. Who was it that had the helmet catch? Was it David Tyree, I think?
David Tyree.
David Tyree had the helmet catch. Julian Edelman, when he had the bobble catch in the Super Bowl against the Atlanta Falcons, where it looked like he had it, and then he literally bobbled it right as he was down on the ground and somehow caught it again.
Incredible.
You know, it seems like every Super Bowl there's always one freak play that defines that Super Bowl. And
yeah, I think it really plays into, I was just going to say, I think, Steve, when it comes down to stuff like that, when something's so, like, momentum-changing, when it comes down to one play, it always favors the team, you know, whether it's the Bulls or Lakers or, you know, you can look at any team in any sport. When they're used to winning it all, I just felt by the end of the third quarter, the Chiefs are going to win. Because when that freak play happened, it's like, well, the Chiefs are comfortable. The Niners are like, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. The Niners mentally, I think, defeated themselves.
Right. And by the way, I don't buy that bullshit explanation that they said of, oh, we didn't know the overtime rules. If you didn't know the overtime rules, that's on Shanahan. That's on Shanahan to not have informed you guys, even though the referee himself informed you guys at the start of the overtime what the rules were.
I even said that on my show. And I'm quite somebody agrees. How do you not know? It was explained to both teams at the start of overtime, flipping the coin, explain how it works, and you think, I don't get it. How dumb are you? Obviously different than I thought. Even I knew that.
Guys, I think the real question was about the overtime rules was in preparation, you know, in practice. These guys are grueling behind the scenes, getting ready in Vegas. I don't think they reviewed the overtime philosophy, the scenario. And Andy Reid and Mahomes, you know, they're doing their homework at night. They were prepared for it. So I really think there was an edge there.
Yeah, you know, and another thing, too, that I forgot to mention was, you know, San Francisco had everything going their way in the first half to the point of where you had Andy Reid taking Travis Kelce out of the game in clutch situations where Travis Kelce could have been a huge blocker. I think it was on the San Francisco touchdown that they had where he could have been a huge blocker not the San Francisco touchdown. It was Kansas City where – Was it intercepted or did he fumble the
ball?
It
was in the second quarter.
Yeah.
It was in the second quarter, Steve. Good call. It was in the second quarter, and it was near the end of the half. And Kansas City had what? You know, 6 points, 3 points on the board, and
yeah.
Kelce was absolutely livid. But yeah, I think they fumbled that play. The blocker missed the block. His backup.
Yeah. Yeah, and not just that, but the fact is that he literally started charging at Andy Reid.
Ridiculous.
That one instance went all over worldwide news, like Fox Sports, TMZ, CNN, Fox News. You know, a whole bunch of outlets were picking up that one situation that ended up taking place.
Yeah, I mean, that's another
option.
I mean, the Niners had the momentum. It was so obvious. It was just, they just didn't capitalize. You can't settle for three when you're going, you know, it's like, you know, you can't settle for small stuff when you're going against the champs. The Chiefs have been completely vulnerable. The Eagles should have had them. I can say every time that I've seen Mahomes in the Super Bowl, I'm not trying to laud and worship the Chiefs. I'm saying every time I've seen them, they've been beatable. Brady got them.
Yeah.
But you cannot squander opportunities. You can't fumble if you're Jalen Hurts. You cannot do what you did if you're Shanahan. You know, they left a lot of points on the board. Like you said, Steve, you're going away from McCaffrey. McCaffrey's the best running back the last 10 years. Why are you not feeding him the ball religiously the whole game?
Yeah. Want to be more precise?
Yeah,
What was it?
You have Christian McCaffrey. Feed him the ball. You have Christian McCaffrey.
Right. But, Lou, what did you say? You said some sort of percentage?
No, I said, like, you know, what did you do or what did you not do? So, you know, I mean, yeah. Because the thing of it, they really weren't using their head in the overtime. I mean, the 49ers, that is, and you know, that's happening. Like, what were you thinking, or were you not thinking at all?
Right.
That was a whole totally different story. Shanahan saying, "Oh, we're preparing for the third possession." I mean, even the coach didn't realize what the stakes were or what the implications, how to actually play the overtime. I mean, come on, they were like handing it over to KC on a platter.
They should have done their homework.
Yeah, and I mean, love him or hate him. I mean, the Chiefs, Mahomes, and, you know, my favorite coach ever, Reed, I love him from the days of the Eagles. I mean, they do their homework, and
yeah.
They'll gladly take another ring. I thought the Niners should have had that ring, but the Chiefs got it.
Yeah, you think Reed's going to stay now? Because there were rumors about him leaving, and I think I'm retiring. So you think he's going to stay now?
Andy's back, and Swifty Kelce's back, too. They're back for another one. They want a three-peat. So I don't think they will.
I mean,
the past 2 years, I haven't thought they would. But, you know, whatever.
I don't know, Alex. I mean, you take a look at what Kansas City had this year. Compared to their previous two Super Bowl wins, this may have been the weakest offensive unit that they've had.
Oh, they have money in their salary cap too. They can add add two or three awesome free agents and be better next year. That's the scary part for the rest of the league.
Yeah, I mean, I said this on Lou's show earlier. I find it hard to. I find it hard to bet against Kansas City next year. You know, I know the sports books are saying that San Francisco is going to open up as the title favorites, but you look at what Kansas City did this year with literally maybe the worst offense of each of their contending years.
Yeah,
offense I feel of the Mahomes era, and
yeah. I agree.
They still beat one of the best defensive teams in the Super Bowl.
Right. Now, I will say they did have their best since then. Not that I'm not saying they have the, they don't have the 85 Bears or, they don't have the Ravens defense.
Well, but
their defense was, I'd say, like a B+, where, last year the Eagles scored, 40 points. So their defense is a lot better. But, yeah, this is the worst. I don't want to say worst. You can't call anything Chiefs-related worst. But for the Chiefs' style and their model of excellence, this is the least explosive offense they have. You know, I'm Tyreek Hill.
Yeah,
they didn't even have Kadarius. They deactivated Kadarius Toney. I mean, you're throwing a Martavius Cantlin, who's dropped 3 or 4 big balls during the year, and they really had slim pickings at wide receiver. So they're going
to
upgrade on the receivers. They're going
to
add receivers.
To be fair, though, I think it was actually a good move for them to sit Kadarius Toney.
Oh, he's crazy.
He's been known in clutch situations to drop clutch balls.
You can't have that in the Super Bowl. No, Andy Reid was like,
right.
Nope, you're wearing sweatpants today. You're wearing sweatpants. You're not putting a helmet on.
So I don't blame Kansas City for sitting him, because you don't want that to potentially happen where you have a big moment in the game where a catch is needed, and if the ball is thrown his way and something happens where either he drops it or he fumbles it into an interception, you don't want a situation like that to potentially happen. So I don't blame Kansas City for sitting Kadarius Toney in the Super Bowl.
Not one bit.
Like they did this year.
Too risky. I mean, think about that. Every play is absolutely monumental. Think about if they suit him up and he catches one catch. And we've seen that guy be a bonehead multiple times. Okay, it's not the time to prove that you're normal in the Super Bowl. You can prove that you're mentally normal next training camp, not in the Super Bowl.
But I mean, just take a look at their offense though, Kansas City this year. Travis Kelce, nine catches, and obviously, I mean, we got basically out of Kelce what we expect out of him. Nine catches, 93 yards. Mecole Hardman, he finally showed up, 3 catches for 57 yards. Justin Watson, this is the first I've heard of him. 3 catches for 54 yards. Rashee Rice was a little low, though. 6 catches, 39 yards. So, for a guy who's as fast as Rice, you almost feel like you could have gotten more out of him. So,
yeah, no doubt. He left a little bit of a butter on the table. I mean, I think right now he's their number one. Talent-wise, there's no one else. So Watson, Scantling, and Rice is probably a second-round pick. I'm not sure. But, yeah, he's kind of like the guy. Yeah. But, I mean, imagine if KC adds a Mike Evans or someone like that. Scary.
Right, exactly.
I mean, Mahomes won two in a row after they lost Tyreek Hill. So, I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I guarantee you you're probably going to see Kansas City either through the draft or through free agency. You're going to see them add another impact receiver, Mike Evans, whether they find somebody through the draft like they did Rashee Rice, they're gonna go for another impact receiver. And I'll tell you this. As far as Kelce and Andy Reid go, whether or not, are they going to retire? Are they going to come back?
They're fine.
They will be with the team. They will be with the team until this run ends.
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank you for answering. I mean, thank you for, you just stole the words, out of my heart. I mean, that's obvious. I think they're both such competitors. You notice Reid, I know he's not the sharpest, not the spryest chicken, whatever you want to call it. He's an older guy. He's a little bit big. He's eaten more cheeseburgers than I have lately. But he wasn't even fazed. There wasn't a big blow-up. He didn't yell. He didn't throw his headset off. He played it off. Because Kelce, in the heat of the moment, he wanted to be in there. Better way to do it, maybe in the locker room, maybe not during the Super Bowl. But, hey, it's Super Bowl. I mean, Kelce, they put a towel over it and wrapped it up. They didn't make it bigger than it was. So, I mean, I don't know about you guys. Do you guys think that was a huge blow up? I mean, I think that's just Kelce saying, I want a damn ring.
Yeah.
Well,
I agree with you.
You know what it sounded like, or what it seemed like, and I was checking on social media throughout this whole thing as well. There were some people that believed that we were seeing the final game of Travis Kelce, with how everything was imploding, how Travis Kelce, you know, went after Andy Reid like he did. And let me tell you right now, if it was any other coach, if it was somebody like, if he went after somebody like Belichick, like that.
Yeah,
he would have been benched the entire rest of the game.
His kneecaps would have been crushed. Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was just two ultimate. That was two competitors. I mean, Kelce's just fired up. I mean, he wants to win a Super Bowl,
right?
And regardless of Taylor and all the other, I don't think Kelce is chasing the whole thing with the whole Taylor Swift. He doesn't need that. That's what a few idiots that I've known that. Oh, yeah, he's just chasing. No, dude, he's well-respected. He's maybe the best tight end of all time. I think he's pretty comfortable in his own skin. He just wanted another ring. He wanted to be in there every single play. That's why he flipped out. And I don't think he was going to retire either way. He's a really good competitor.
Wow.
You know, he's never been in trouble. I mean, come on. Give the guy a little break.
Yeah.
Has his brother ever been in trouble?
No, I mean, they're both awesome. And his brother Jason's like the leader of the Eagles, my favorite Eagle. And he might retire.
Okay.
He's a couple years older, but.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's be fair, though. The position he plays center. You know, normally you don't really see players, you don't really see linemen have long-term careers. Where, especially when you consider all of the, all of the stress that he puts on his body on a weekly basis, you know, guarding Jalen Hurts. I think the one player that, who was that former Rams guard or Rams tackle that now works for, from the Rams. Who was the guy that now works for NFL Network?
You're talking about a Rams lineman? You're pushing it. Not Kurt Warner, not quarterback. You're talking about a lineman?
Howie Lineman. I think it's Whitworth or something.
Oh, and Andrew Whitworth. Yeah, former Ram, left tackle. 6'7".
Yeah, so,
Irish guy, like red, blondish hair, big guy with a goatee.
Right, yeah. So he retired at like the age of 39 or 40. It's very rare that you see linemen in this day and age, in this version of the NFL, go that long for,
Kelce's 36. I just think Kelce's 36. I know I'm biased, but point blank, think about Kelce. That guy's a competitor, just like his brother Travis. And Jason, the Eagles were they were closer than the Niners last year. They were a lot closer. I mean, they were just as close last year to have the Super Bowl. Jason Kelce's not hanging him up. He's coming back one more year, I think. I know I'm biased, but, I mean, you think he wants to go out getting blown up by the Bucks? The Eagles' year was a Travis year. They want one more chance. I think he does. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think Jason Kelce, Eagle, is going to retire? I think he'll go one more run.
I think he could go
one. It's a tough call.
What is he? Is he a free agent?
He's 36. No, I mean, I don't even know what his contract is.
He's not going to suddenly go to the... Yeah, he signed a one-year deal, so he's a free agent this year, I think.
No, he's like Mr. Eagle. He's not going to suddenly jump out somewhere else.
He wants to play
one more year for the Eagles.
Yeah,
he's not
going
to go sign another team. He's not signing another team suddenly.
25.
You're right. He's going to retire.
Okay, no, never mind. So he is under contract for one more year, for this year. So...
Yeah, and he said, like,
he,
oh, I think I'm done.
Probably,
like, he told us. Sorry, Steve.
Well, I was just saying, he could probably just play out the remainder of his contract. Because,
well, yeah, I mean, I think he wants one more year.
He signed through 2027.
Right.
Originally, he was signed through 2027, but something happened where they I guess they voided the last 3 years of his deal. So if he stays for one more year, he would basically be playing out the remainder of his deal.
Yeah, and again, not to beat the Eagles drum being a big time fan, but I think overall, I mean, Kelsey definitely wants to play one more year. Because, I mean, they went out, they were on a downward spiral. You know, now they have all
right.
new coaches. They have all new coaches besides the head coach, who I don't like, but whatever. You know what I mean? They have all new coordinators, and now they have all the same players. And he loves Hurts. He loves Philly. I think he's coming back for one more year. Just one more year. Try to get back to the Super Bowl. Not likely, but, hey, it's possible.
Yeah, you know, I do think that he could come back for one more year, especially considering, you know, he seems like he's one of those type of players that would like to finish out a contract before, because he,
right.
you know, he wouldn't want to leave any dead money, so to speak. He wouldn't want to leave any dead money on the organization. So I wouldn't be surprised if he plays it out one more year. Now, here's a question I have, though. With Andy Reid, this being his third Super Bowl win, his third Super Bowl win in the last 5 years.
Wow.
Where does this put him? Where does this put him among NFL coaches now?
I have an answer. Lou, Diane, what do you guys think?
Oh, it's gotta be up there, you know, one of the best. I mean, you know, three in the last 5 years. I mean, this is a dynasty we're talking here now. So he's gotta be ranked up near the top three.
All right, what are your thoughts, Diane, when it comes to Andy Reid? Where does he sit on the all time list of coaches after this Super Bowl win?
Top three.
What about you, Alex? I mean, you probably
yeah,
have,
I think,
considering, you know, he is the former Eagles coach, what are your thoughts on where Andy Reid
yeah,
stands?
I got a sweet spot for him. I really love the guy. And then two, but I know how good he is. So, yeah, yeah. I'm going to say, you know, he's right there with Belichick. And, you know, not for nothing, you know, the guys of Lombardi, Tom Landry. I mean, if you say, you
right.
know, Belichick is hand down the best, I don't know if I agree with that totally, because I think Lombardi's great. I think the past 30 years, Belichick's the best. I think – no, I agree with you. I think Belichick's the best. And then I think the
yeah.
last, what, 10 years? Or now we're like – if you want to say 5 years, you know, from the last 5 years to – the next 5 years, you know, if they stay together, if they get one or two more, you'd have to say he's right there with Belichick. If they get another two or three.
Yeah.
If they get another two or three. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying that might be a possibility where it's like, you know, you might have a, you know, Kobe Jordan thing. Who's the best? They're both incredible.
Right.
But I think that's why Reid is sticking around. I think that's why Kelsey's sticking around. If they three-peat, that's pretty badass.
Yeah, but what, would you say that Reid is now at least top five?
Yeah, overall. Yeah, not as good as Belichick. Top five overall, definitely. I'm thinking he's sticking around with Kelsey. I mean, if they go three in a row right now you're getting into Patriots play. And then if they both stick around the next 3 or 4 years, if they win two more, what does that put them at, five? What did Brady and Belichick have overall?
Brady has.
I'm not
seven.
Saying
that. You're talking about a coach quarterback tandem. Brady and Belichick
yeah.
have six together.
Wow. Okay. So Patrick and Andy have three. I mean, yeah, they might. You know, they're in the conversation. I put Bill over him
right.
a little bit. You know, and also, you know, it's also like recent, you know, whatever you want to say, recall. I mean, without Brady, I just see that, and then I see Reed now really blossoming. So I don't think Reed wants to go in there. I think Reed kind of, if he gets a couple more rings, he's going to say, hey, you know what? Why not me over Bill? I mean, the guy's an offensive genius. So we're getting to that the territory. He's kind of he's getting up to the Patriot land. If they win another couple ones, there's a long way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's I definitely think that there is a case to be made when it comes to...
I think Brady Belichick are the best ever. I think Brady Belichick are the best ever. But I think Reed and Mahomes are kind of like saying, hey,
yeah,
they're going to try to kind of go for that. they're both not retiring. So, I mean, if you give them another 3 years, they win two more, then you have five rings. Now it's a real discussion. It's already a debate. I mean, Kansas City fans are already kind of talking about that. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about what was that, Diane?
Is it really getting up there though? Maybe it is time for him to retire.
Yeah, he is.
He's being up there.
Maybe it
sure.
is time for him to retire.
Yeah, I think Andy Reid. I think he's what in his 60s right now, 65.
I thought
he's
big red.
Yeah, maybe it's him from George Iyer.
I love the guy. His wife is like, okay, honey, the guy's never turned down a cheeseburger. He's kind of getting up there, and he's a big guy. Got to slow down a little bit.
Well, hey, I mean, you know, he has all those endorsements.
Yeah.
He has all those endorsements now from when it comes to cheeseburgers and everything. So I mean, he's definitely made himself quite a killing, not just on the football field, but off the football field as well.
Yes.
But, I mean, you take a look at, technically this is his fourth Super Bowl win, but his third as a head coach. He had a Super Bowl win with the Green Bay Packers back in Super Bowl 31.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Since when did he coach the Packers?
He started with Mike Holmgren. He started with Brett Favre's guys, and he grew up to, he had four close shots with the Eagles, too. I mean, Reed's just getting going now. He's old. He's older. But now he's like, wow, I'm with Patrick. I mean, that's his ultimate quarterback. I think for any coach, that's the ultimate quarterback you want, Mahomes. So Reed's not retiring anytime soon. He's like, now I got the real guy going with me. Now he's really, you know.
Now,
it's hard to leave that situation.
And here, you know, here's another thing as well. Coming out of this whole out of this Super Bowl is, and this may prove to be very unpopular, but I almost think that Mahomes is up there now with Brady. And I mean, make no mistake about this.
100%.
I'm not comparing Mahomes to Brady because Mahomes said it himself. Brady, I'm 0-2 against Brady in the playoffs. So
that's fine.
Like literally, if you're matching up the two of them, you know, there's obviously no comparison. But you have to take when you take a look at the comparisons between the two, when it comes to being able to take command of a team and being able to, you know, bring them back from behind, make game-winning drives. And I mean, just take a look at his resume. He won the MVP again for the Super Bowl. Three-time Super Bowl MVP, three-time Super Bowl champion.
If there's one guy who's going to knock off Brady, we're watching him every day with playing for Kansas City right now. Let's be honest.
Right.
I mean, you guys had it. You guys were spoiled. You guys had it great. Yeah, Brady was the GOAT, because I don't know. Because if there's one guy who can push him to the limit,
right?
Before Jordan, everyone said there's never going to be another Wilt Chamberlain. And then, Jordan or Kobe, and then LeBron. And now it's like, you know what? Mahomes is in the conversation. There's no one that can say 100% Brady will be the best of all time. You can't scientifically prove it. If Mahomes wins three more championships, then who's to say who's better? So it's like he's in the conversation firmly.
Right, and you know it's kind of weird too when you think about it that this could almost be one of those situations where you talk about who is the greatest who's the greatest quarterback of all time, and this could be one of those conversations where you're like, you have to look at the type of era of football that he played in when talking about who the greatest of all time is.
I mean, it's Steve, and Lou just nailed it. I mean, some people say Montana. I mean, Dan Marino never won a ring in his life. That's the best quarterback I've ever seen. I'm not 70, but, I'm 45, going on 20, but that's besides the point. But, I mean, there's a lot of different I just think that overall, I'm not trying to disparage Brady, but I think the overall, goat automatically. There's a lot of people that think differently. There is a handful of great quarterbacks that are in that mix. And that's like the Jordan, Kobe, LeBron argument. What's better, a Ferrari, a Porsche, or a Lamborghini? They're all incredible. it's almost like personal preference. It's almost like personal preference. I mean, Brady right now, if Mahomes keeps going on this trajectory, I think Mahomes. I don't know. Mahomes is the best I've seen in the last 20 years. Well, that includes Brady. So it's like it's a tough call. Brady has more rings. To me, Mahomes is more physically impressive because he's, throws harder. I don't know what it is. But, Brady right now has the upper edge.
Right. Brady has the advantage. In terms of I'm talking about in terms of, when people look back at this, like, obviously we don't know how many more Super Bowls Patrick Mahomes is going to win. But
of course not. He could never get back there again.
Right.
Right.
But it's like this is one of those moments where you're like, when you take a look back at history, like once Patrick Mahomes retires and – you look at, let's look at who's the greatest quarterback of all time. You know the media is immediately going to go to Brady versus Mahomes.
Yeah.
Even though Joe Montana should be on the, conversation, there's right. others that should be in the conversation. The media is immediately going to go to Mahomes versus Brady.
Yes.
Of course. It's a sexy conversation. It's the immediate, it's the easy and more entertainable, whatever you want to call it, for ratings. Mahomes is like the recent one. Brady's the GOAT who just retired. So, yeah, that's
right.
The instant matchup right there, boom, Brady Mahomes.
Of course.
That's literally
like Jordan leaving the NBA with Kobe coming in. And then LeBron.
Right.
I mean, when one GOAT leaves, another GOAT enters. Wait a second. Is this guy really better than the other one? And it's going to be a chase to prove who's better. It's going to be a competition.
Yeah.
Every year they're going to be judged.
One stat that I found amazing was they said that Pat Mahomes threw his first interception in, I think it was 1.5 or 2 years, they said. That he threw his first interception in the playoffs within the last 1.5 to 2 years in this Super Bowl. The fact that
what was his stat?
I forget how many straight games that they said he went. without throwing a pick in the playoffs.
Right.
How about Brady, though?
And
that's an interesting stat.
Oh, no, I'm not comparing him to Brady when it comes to that. I was just bringing that up.
Right.
I was going to say, like, like any of the best quarterbacks, the interceptions can be a tough stat. If your team needs you to throw on, like, third and 14, you're going to throw more picks than if it's third and 3. So I still, like,
right.
There's so many different stats. I mean, Brady and Mahomes, yeah, the best in the last 20, 25 years, hands down.
You know, though, this is actually, statistically, this is the second worst of his three Super Bowl wins. This is the second worst statistical postseason that he's had. Even though he went 4-0, and he threw more passes and he completed more passes, he threw for the second most yards. He missed it by about 6 yards. I'm looking at the wrong year. So he actually threw for the most yards this Super Bowl, or this postseason, I should say, throughout his whole career. He threw for the most yards out of each of his Super Bowl seasons.
Wow.
The big difference is the touchdown and interception. His touchdowns were a little bit low compared to his previous two Super Bowl wins. But
sure. And you can also attribute that to a lack of a number one receiver. But, like, he's carrying the ball. I mean, it's just like, and, dude, I'm not trying to beat the Mahomes drum. I mean, I fell victim to him last year as an Eagles fan.
Right.
But I just think this guy's the one. And Brady used to be the one before. It's like they're both incredible.
Right.
To be interesting tale, like, in 20 years. Or 40 years. Who's the best one? They're both incredible. Pick your Ferrari or your Porsche.
Pick your poison.
I'm very intrigued to see. And you know, it hurts as a Patriot fan saying this, knowing that you know Mahomes could be the one.
Oh come on,
doesn't
hurt. But I mean, come on, Steve. You have so many rings. I mean, how much does it hurt if like. Brady, you know Brady isn't pissed about it. He like respects Mahomes too. I mean, come on, you won the ring.
No, I know.
Oh,
but
another guy's as good as Brady. That's the way the evolution is, man. There's always going to be better people coming in 5-10 years from now.
Yeah, it's more of a case of you know I want it to be my guy. You know, I want.
I hear you.
I want my guy to have the, you know, to have that position, basically.
The GOAT status. Well, you know what? He still does.
The GOAT status.
He still does.
He still
does. We can't assume anything. I mean, Mahomes could go to the Raiders. No, I'm just kidding.
There's a fat chance that's ever happening.
Yeah.
I'm kidding, but I mean, hey. He's gotten a little bit lucky these last two Super Bowls. I don't know if you guys agree, but
lucky?
You know, it wasn't exactly a wipeout. I mean, he could easily not win one again. Yeah, he's gotten a little bit lucky twice. Yeah, I think Jalen Hurts should have one. But, I mean, and then I think Purdy should have gotten one if Shanahan was doing better. So, I mean, Mahomes could win three more. Mahomes could win three more or Mahomes could win zero more. It's really up to Mahomes.
Yeah, you know, the problem with Shanahan is I literally look at his three Super Bowl chances, two of them as a head coach, one of them as a coordinator. I look at his three
Falcons,
Super Bowl 20, chances.
28-3.
Yeah.
He blew that. He was the one who blew that.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think he's a great coach, but whatever.
And I look at this Super Bowl and I look at the play calling he did and I'm like, you mean to tell me that you're this big elite offensive mind and
nope.
In clutch situations in this Super Bowl, you designed a couple of three and outs in clutch situations.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no excuse for
overrated.
It, you know, at least.
Sorry. Oh, overrated.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Wake me up. Imagine if even the Cowboys, even the Cowboys are obviously like the Patriots with Belichick, or the Cowboys now, or the Eagles now, or like, imagine if another coach had Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle. I mean, these weapons, they had like 10 yards each. Shanahan. Yeah, and that's the guy that he was part of the 28-3 disaster at the hands of the Patriots. So I've always been interested why people, oh, this guy's a guru. I'm like, this guy is not a whatever. He hasn't really shown he's a great coach to me.
Yeah, no. And actually, who was the other receiver to get hurt? Was it Ayuk or was it Deebo?
Deebo got hurt again.
Was it Deebo?
He always does.
Because
he slams the Eagles. I hate no one, but like he always like mirrors the Eagles too. But yeah, he got injured again. I think Ayuk, Kittle, and Deebo had like 30 yards combined. If you look at the stats, I don't know if that's play calling. I don't know what it is, but like you have to show up in the Super Bowl against Mahomes. You're gonna lose.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I was looking at that. I was looking at that, and I'm like, man, you know, they're screwed if they, if they continue on and Deebo isn't able to continue, you know, it's bad enough that they lost Dre Greenlaw, but then they potentially lose Deebo.
Yeah,
it's just, yeah, you know, it's just like, man, it's hard to recover from that, basically, especially when all the pressure's on and you're going up against the defending champion. I mean,
that's the thing. I just felt like they were nervous, and then they – what were they up – what? You know, like the 3-0 stuff, and then hitting field goals doesn't matter much in the long run. Like,
right.
They had the upper hand, and they didn't capitalize early on.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of the field goals, you know, you had Jake Moody hit a Super Bowl record 55-yarder, but that was before Harrison Butker – then decided to hit one from 57 yards. I mean, you know, we talk about what's his name from the Ravens being Mr. Automatic. It's almost like Harrison Butker is
Butker.
Mr. Automatic for Kansas City.
Butker. Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, it's just like, wow. I mean, so we had that for a little bit of history. Obviously, the Super Bowl going into the new overtime rules. And also, Jawan Jennings now joins Nick Foles as the only players to ever throw and catch a touchdown in the same Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So that's two little historical tidbits when it comes to this year's Super Bowl. And indeed, you know, Andy Reid has said that he doesn't plan to retire. Travis Kelce has said the same thing, that he plans to return. And I mean, Andy Reid, you know, he's sitting right now at 258 regular season wins with Bill Belichick taking the year off. He's going to get a little bit closer.
Sorry. Sorry, Steve, I was talking to my dog.
Yeah.
I don't care.
No
my
problem.
Apologies.
So, you know, it's entirely possible that maybe perhaps if Belichick can't get back into the NFL, which I find hard to believe, but considering his age, you know, I mean, I guess, we could see Andy Reid potentially coach up until the point where he potentially catches Belichick. The longer that Belichick stays out of the league.
Stopping. I mean, they're not stopping right now. I mean, Kelce and him are back, so you could see him go for another two or three.
then it gets really interesting. It's already very interesting. I think they're very close right now. You know, not record-wise, but momentum-wise, energy-wise. I think with this generation of fans, they're getting a lot of steam about, you know, maybe being in that conversation. I don't want to say the other thing. That's dangerous. But I'm saying they're inching towards that GOAT thing if they keep
going. Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, an injury update on Dre Greenlaw. He did undergo surgery to repair the torn left Achilles tendon back on Thursday. It looks like he will be highly questionable for week one. Right now, his recovery time frame places him being ready for, I think it's the second week of the preseason, and that's just before he'll even be cleared.
Yes.
So we're likely going to see a long recovery time frame for Greenlaw here. And I mean, that's what makes it so rough when it comes to Super Bowl teams or Super Bowl injuries, that you know, before you know it, you're looking at another NFL season, like literally getting ready for another NFL season 6 months later. So for Greenlaw, it sounds like, at least as of right now, week one is looking highly skeptical that he will be ready for week one.
Well, it's still 6 months for training camp, you know, so that might be a little change.
Yeah, but he's not even going to be ready for training camp, though. That's the thing. He's not even going to be ready for training camp. You know, he'll be ready like right in the middle of the preseason. And by the way, this just in from the NBA, Damian Lillard officially repeats as the three-point contest champion for the Milwaukee Bucks, defeating Trae Young and Karl Anthony Towns in the final round of the three-point competition. So that just coming over the rounds here. I want to get your thoughts, Alex, on Dre Greenlaw, because as I just mentioned, he just had surgery, and right now the time frame is calling for, more than likely, he won't be ready till about maybe the second week of the preseason, and that's just him getting medically cleared. So what are your thoughts, Alex, on Greenlaw and his availability for next season?
On who, Steve? Sorry.
On Greenlaw.
Oh, it's part of the Super Bowl?
Yeah. With his injury right now, the time frame, it looks like, if anything, he won't be ready till about maybe mid-August, and that's just to be cleared.
Well, yeah. Oh, Greenlaw for the Super Bowl? Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
he's got a long road to recovery. I mean, that's, you see people who get injured during the Super Bowl. That's like the height of their careers, and that's the hardest thing to get back from. But, you know, you got to have faith in the Lord and faith in his system, and he's got money and he's got pride and he's got a family, and I think he'll get back. It's never a guaranteed chance. I mean, and he got injured
too. Yeah, this could be a significant setback actually for that defense. You know, you may end up seeing them.
Oh,
I mean, they're probably going to re-sign Chase Young anyways. But I think this may make them prioritize re-signing Chase Young as a first priority to make sure he doesn't even reach the open market.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's Well, I mean, imagine if you or me or anyone or Steve or, you know, you get injured in the Super Bowl. It's terrible. It's terrible mentally because you're at the highest point of your career and then you're down and out. So, I mean, the Niners, I think, love him. He's an emotional leader there. So, yeah, of course, I think he'll be back for the Niners. The Niners aren't going to, you know, let him go. The Niners love him. He's like one of their leaders.
Right.
So, you know, Shanahan and those guys are going to be back trying again. Hopefully Shanahan learns the OT rules next year.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, you can only hope that, you know, that they finally get it through the thick skulls that maybe we should actually pay attention instead of.
You know what's funny, though, Steve? I've seen far worse. Lou, you've seen Switzer, you've seen McCarthy. You've seen some Cowboys coaches. I've seen a lot worse out of Eagles coaches too. I've seen Reid do worse. I've seen Andy Reid do ridiculously mentally inept things. But yeah, hopefully Shanahan learns the OT rules.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah, everybody can help because I mean I got to tell you, you know, and I kind of agreed when I was listening to sports radio earlier this week. Next year is probably the final year for the Niners with Brock Purdy, and I say it this way, meaning that, you know, they're going to have to make a decision on whether or not Brock Purdy is the guy. And if he's not the guy, then, you know, at some point they're going to have to make that decision like, okay, hey, we're going to have to invest in somebody else at some point moving forward here.
Who are you talking about, Steve? I'm sorry. Yeah. You talking about Purdy?
Purdy, yeah. Because – you know, they were discussing on, then again, this is, you know, keep in mind, this is Boston radio that we're talking about here.
Love it.
But I think it is worth noting that, you know, they may have a point here when it comes to, you know, if you're looking at the Niners and their young core, they have a window of contention of contending right now.
Yeah,
and I mean, if you have this opportunity, and say they blow it again with Brock Purdy next year, you know, you wonder,
you wonder,
okay, you know, is Brock Purdy ever gonna be the guy? Or are they just going to go, you know, will they just go elsewhere? Will they finally have to invest?
Right now they're wondering if he's the guy. They have to be. I'm sorry. When the fourth quarter hit, I'm like, okay, let's see. If you're in the desert and you have to bet, you know, $1 million, or if you have to bet your last $5 in the world, who are you betting, Purdy versus Mahomes? Purdy's not –
I mean, obviously,
I don't think he's,
Mahomes.
Yeah, but I'm just saying overall. And who had the better team? The Niners. So
right.
It's like, no, and I'm not trying to, you know, toot the Chiefs' horn too much, but I'm just saying, like, I've seen the Niners very often just like you guys. Do you think he's the answer? Or they might win one. I don't know. I would move off him right now and draft the quarterback or sign Cousins.
I mean,
I think Cousins is better than Purdy right now.
Just my opinion. I feel, and I've said this before on this show, that if they don't have all of their weapons, Purdy is just an average quarterback. He's not on the same level. You know, he's not on the same level as like a Pat Mahomes or I wouldn't even. Well, actually, I was going to say Josh Allen, but I think I can kind of erase that. I don't even put him on the same level as, you know, like a Jalen Hurts. You know, somebody who can actually
elevate.
I hope he would, Steve.
I hope you win.
Well, what I'm saying is somebody who can elevate their teammates.
Hurts are the best Super Bowl in the last 30 years, last year, but they fumbled and they gave up 40 points to the Chiefs. But, I mean, it's
right.
All relative. But I'm no, you're right. I mean, this year Hurts looked like shit, so who knows. And Jim loves Hurts. I'm like, I love the guy too, and I'm like, I'm still waiting on that ring. It's so hard to predict. But, yeah, I mean, do you think Purdy could win a ring? It's so hard to predict.
It all depends, really, because you need all the right cards to fall into place. And I really thought that this was the best opportunity that Purdy has had so far. Now, granted, it's only been 2 years that he's been in the league. But from what I've seen out of Purdy, it's almost like if one of his teammates he hasn't had that quality of being able to lift up his teammates and, you know, be the reason why they excel. They're more the reason why he excels.
That's a really fine line, and that's so hard to tell too. And I mean, who am I to I definitely don't know more about Shanahan than Shanahan. I'm not trying to be a pope or the guru, but I'm just saying from what I see, it's like, I'd rather have Mahomes, a Brady, obviously. And if
right.
I'm going to war, I'd love if I'm going to war too. And you can't have it all. I'd love to have a Hurts or a CJ Stroud. A CJ Stroud's another guy. I mean, I think Hurts going to win a ring before he's done. I think Stroud's going to win a ring before he's done. You know, I want one of those guys. But, like, I just don't see it with Purdy. It's such a competitive league. I feel like when you get to the Super Bowl, I mean, think about that. You have McCaffrey, Debo, Kittle. So Kittle and McCaffrey are definitely Hall of Famers. They have an incredible defense, incredible offensive line. Purdy's not good enough.
Quarterback.
Just like, there you go. And I hate to say that. It is what it is.
And, I said this thing, too, before the Super Bowl, I had said that the Niners probably had a better defense this year than the last time these two teams met up in the Super Bowl.
I agree.
So, the one thing that everybody's going to always wonder is, what would have happened if Dre Greenlaw didn't get injured in that freak accident?
He's a win.
Yeah, he's a linebacker.
He's
pivotal.
Yeah.
He's one of the leaders. But you have Fred Warner, you have Nick Bosa, you have – yeah, he's one of their leaders, right, overall?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you just take a look at what they did, what happened in that game. After he got injured, Kansas City basically bullied his replacement.
Yeah, that's true. They're gonna smell, blood and water when a coach sees that someone's out. They started attacking the guy who was his replacement.
Yeah,
they went right at him. Yeah, no, they did the short stuff over the middle. That's where Kelce started thriving. Greenlaw would have been on Kelce.
Yeah, I think it really speaks a lot. So I'll say this about Purdy, he's probably the best Mr. Irrelevant maybe that's ever been in the league. But at the same time, there's a reason why he was Mr. Irrelevant. So
I don't mean to laugh.
It almost seems like he's more of a product of the system as opposed to him elevating others.
Probably right before your shot, I mean, Steve, you're obviously very well-versed. You have an incredible show online tonight. But, when we were growing up, I mean, Dilfer. Steve, you remember Dilfer? He was the ultimate game manager for the Ravens. Literally.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I'm trying to
he would throw one – Yeah, so you do remember him. All right, cool. So I'm sorry about that, but I was still giving you praise.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be my one best comparison to Purdy, where it's like, don't mess up, maybe throw a pick and just hand the ball off or throw it to a tight end. and less defense. I just don't – with that offense, though, see, they don't have that defense. The San Fran defense was overrated, I thought. They gave up a lot of points. Detroit, I thought, should have knocked them off 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I thought they were kind of overrated.
Right, yeah. They got shredded by Detroit, and they got shredded by Green Bay,
really did.
Too.
Detroit could have been in that game.
Yes.
Yeah, so it does. It really does make you wonder, if it was any other team other than San Francisco, would Kansas City have still repeated? But also, that's why they say, like basketball, football is a game of matchups.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's entirely possible that even if Detroit or Green Bay had made it in, Kansas City may have still potentially won anyways. Maybe even won by a wider margin.
Yeah, I mean, we were having fun on both your shows two Saturdays ago. I think I was saying, I really thought Detroit should have been here. That would have been fun. I thought Detroit earned that. I think Detroit would have played a little harder, too. Not harder, but I think that, I don't know. San Fran seemed, like, timid. Detroit would have gone balls to the wall. You know, Dan Campbell, the coach, would have gone, like, 4-3. 4th-3, he would have been thrown.
Right.
But he would have, it's kind of like San Fran, I just don't think with Purdy, put it this way, even simpler to break it down. I like Goff more than Purdy. Who do you guys think is a better quarterback, Goff or Purdy?
Goff, without a doubt.
Goff. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
So if you're going to beat Mahomes,
give me Goff over Purdy any day of the week.
Yeah,
even though Goff had a couple of down years offensively, I mean, I don't think it's really much of a question. Goff has the experience. He's made it to the Super Bowl before, just like Purdy has now. But the main difference is Goff can actually get the ball to his receiver. You know, you wouldn't see many plays of what we saw from Purdy, where Purdy basically the first sign of any pressure and he basically folded. Like he basically threw the ball away, but I shouldn't say throw it away, but he basically, when he would try to make like a short pass, it would miss by like a mile.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love the underdog story. I love the irrelevant. I'm a big fan of Purdy overall, like the story, but I'm thinking like, this guy's not going to beat Mahomes. Goff,
right.
I think Goff was like the redemption story to me. He was the one with, and I thought Detroit, the blue collar city, who's never been there. I thought Detroit would be such a better Super Bowl matchup, but oh well. And like Campbell said, who knows if they'll ever get back there? That was kind of a Cinderella story. Cinderella,
right? Well, because that's the thing too. You know, all of the stars have to align.
It's tough
in
to
the
get
same
back there.
Season.
Right. You're not Brady or Jordan. You in your career, you may never get back to that big dance. That might be your one shot. Most athletes only have one shot there.
Right. Now, we did have, speaking of quarterbacks who have been to the Super Bowl, there is one quarterback who will be looking for a new team, it seems, next year. As Jimmy Garoppolo, it came out today, yesterday, was suspended 2 games for violating the performance-enhancing substances policy. He's not expected to appeal it, and this is also expected to be grounds for him being cut by the Vegas Raiders. And basically, according to the report that came out, Garoppolo had used prescribed medication without a valid therapeutic use exemption. So this will now take the Raiders off of the hook for an $11.25 million roster bonus that he's set to earn. He only played for a quarterback who signed a $72.75 million deal last offseason. He only played a whopping 7 games before he got benched for Aiden O'Connell. So now, I mean, basically any sort of success that, you know, this basically almost brings it back to what I was talking about with San Francisco's offense being more of a system, because we're seeing Brock Purdy excel.
There you go.
In this system. It makes you wonder, what if Brock Purdy was playing elsewhere? Let's say Purdy was playing for the Raiders this year. Would Purdy have still put up the same numbers that he did in San Francisco?
Well, you're flipping it, too, with Jimmy G. Purdy would have been much better with Devontae Adams and Josh Jacobs in Oakland. Yeah.
And now with Jimmy G flaming out of Vegas, this probably, in all likelihood, would possibly be maybe the end of his career as a starter. I think you're probably looking at Garoppolo now as a backup.
Yeah.
If anything.
Yeah. Or XFL. Todd Marinovich. Yeah, he might be playing for the Sharks or for Johnny Manziel's franchise.
Yeah.
Bad joke.
And by the way, speaking of the Raiders, too, now as a result of this, according to Ian Rapoport, they have been in the market for a quarterback, and with them holding the number 13 pick in the draft, there is talk that the Raiders may attempt to move up to draft a quarterback.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they would have to give up a tremendous amount of draft capital in order for that to happen. But... right now, it appears that they don't view Aiden O'Connell as the future moving forward. So I found that kind of interesting. Also, as well, some quarterback or some players that you can take off of the list when it comes to free agency, T. Higgins. It's widely expected that the Bengals will use the franchise tag pay him $20.7 million.
Sorry, Steve. Would have been a huge move for the Patriots. Yeah,
I agree.
Higgins, he's a total number one receiver. Just so happens he's on the Bengals where they have Chase. They have two number ones.
Yeah, but $20.7 million. There's no way he says no to that.
6'4", like 220 and fast. He's like a 25-year-old Mike Evans.
Right.
Like, that would have been, I mean, the Patriots, Jared Mayo would have been like, please sign us up. Come on. They got to get Ridley.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that he says no to that amount of money. Even though he could probably get more money on total on the free agent market, it wouldn't make sense for him to pass up that amount of money considering the down year that he had this year. Let's see. Also, another guy you can take off of the list, the Seahawks informed Geno Smith that he would remain on the roster for 2024. So now he will earn a fully guaranteed salary of $12.7 million next season. And according to Schefter, the Seahawks believe that in today's market, with salaries soaring for starting quarterbacks, the right decision was to pay the money. So,
good old
I mean, for a guy who threw for 3,600 yards this year, 20 touchdowns, 9 picks, I mean, it makes sense to – exercise that option. I mean, even though he did have lesser stats in terms of touchdowns compared to last year, but
it's gonna be the one thing to kind of cause pause and hit the pause button on a contract is a new coaching staff. So Mike McDonald came in, the defensive coordinator from the Ravens defensive coordinator came in. So now he's maybe he doesn't have eyes for Geno like Pete Carroll did.
Uh-huh.
And you notice his quotes. He said, "Oh yeah, we like Geno's a pretty good player." They aren't in love. They're gonna draft or maybe sign a quarterback.
Yeah, possible. I mean, I could see them drafting a quarterback. I don't know about signing. I think they'd probably stay with Geno.
I like Geno personally.
Yeah.
Oh, so do I. I mean, you know, I would, in all honesty, I would take him as a an option for the Patriots if they wanted to sign a veteran quarterback while also drafting a quarterback.
Yeah.
Like say they were to draft somebody in the second round or something to be one of those guys to mentor essentially, like what Brady did with Garoppolo when Garoppolo was drafted in the fourth round. This would basically be Geno Smith would be that type of quarterback that you would sign as a bridge type quarterback.
I still think Geno in the right system could be a very good starting quarterback in a deep playoff push. But I also like the Seahawks overall. I mean, you have two really good receivers, Lockett and DK Metcalf. So you got to put them with a couple, you know, a number one, number two. You got to give them with the weapons. You got to give the weapons. Like most quarterbacks, they need weapons.
Ooh, Jamie Yaquez Jr. with a dunk over Shaq. Not bad.
Uh-huh.
For those wondering, the slam dunk competition is on right now on TNT.
Okay, I'll check this out right now.
But he had to touch Shaq though. That wasn't really a jump over completely.
I see. Yeah.
And by the way, Steph Curry won the battle between him and Sabrina Ionescu 29-26
really?
In the 3-point competition.
Of course. Jesus. Not really surprising, but
it was a good showing for Ionescu, though.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Also, Mike Garofalo has reported that the Steelers and Mitch Trubisky have mutually decided to part ways, making Trubisky a free agent, and the Steelers will take a dead cap hit of about $4.6 million to part ways with Trubisky. What this tells me is that, well, number one, obviously, you know, Trubisky was going to basically go toe-to-toe with Kenny Pickett. But now what this tells me is either A, they still believe Kenny Pickett has what it takes to be a starter, or B, they may be going elsewhere when it comes to either free agency or through the draft.
Yeah, let's go
so
with letter
I think that
let's go with
yeah.
let's go, sorry, let's go with letter C. No, they're not sold on the other. I mean, come on. Fault Pittsburgh all you want, but like that's a proud franchise. You know, Rooney and those guys, they know what's going on. They're not going into next year with Pickett or Trubisky near that quarterback line. No way. No way. No. Again, draft or free agent.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they do have to do something because, you know, Pickett was –
Yeah.
There seemed to be a lot of hype around Pickett, but he really seemed to be lackluster, if anything, in that offense. Jacob Toppin next, and he basically did the exact same thing that Yaquez did, but with a smaller person. Yeah, he did get a better score though. So that puts Toppin in the lead right now. Let's see. Also, just rounding out the NFL news here, the Bears, they released safety Eddie Jackson after picking him in the fourth round in 2017. He started in all 100 games that he has appeared in so far in his career. A two-time Pro Bowler and a former All-Pro. Basically, this will free up, combined with the release of also guard Cody Whitehair, this frees up about $21.5 million in space for the Bears to use this this postseason. Ooh, I can't believe I forgot about this. Well, first off, I should say in the NHL, the Boston Bruins, their fourth line left wing, Milan Lucic, domestic violence charges against him have officially been dismissed after his wife refused to testify in front of the court. However, according to the team press, he will remain suspended from the team for the remainder of the season. And,
yeah.
I mean, in all honesty, it kind of makes sense because they're actually playing better without him than they would have with him. So,
well, it's a tough one today, too, you know.
Yeah.
What a game.
Yeah,
though.
It was... That was a pretty tough one today, with the LA Kings going into overtime. The Bruins held the lead twice in this game before giving up both goals. And Brant Clark scored his first NHL goal in overtime to secure the win for the LA Kings today. The one notable I take from this game, though, is, man, oh, man, Trent Frederick. He's looking an awful lot. That was a pretty good dunk by Jaylen Brown, by the way. He now takes the lead, 48.8. The one thing I noticed about this.
Sorry, Steve, I'm not watching it. Jaylen Brown's lighting it up. I want him to win the dunk champion. That'd be awesome.
I mean, he did a pretty simple dunk for his first one. You know, he didn't overly, you know how normally you're supposed to light it up in like the second and third dunks that you do, you know, you're not supposed to really light it up the first go around like Yaquez and the others have attempted, and Mac McClung just missed his first dunk attempt, so he's probably going to get a lower score on this one. Honestly, I think all Jaylen Brown needs to do is just be simple. Just be simple in this slam dunk year, and he'll be able to get it. And Mac McClung basically just did the same thing as Jacob Toppin.
Yeah.
And Jacob Toppin, obviously, young brother of Obi Toppin, not even in the league.
Yep.
Like, come on, it makes me a bit ridiculous. Come on. Let's go, NBA.
Exactly.
I mean, honestly, the only star in this contest is Jaylen Brown. That's what's sad about this.
Yeah.
That was good or shit.
Oh!
In it, but they're the future camp. Whatever.
Oh my God! Looking at that replay, actually, if McClung had gotten that the first time, he basically grabbed the ball and let go of the ball in midair, and then grabbed it and then did the backwards dunk. So Jaylen Brown beats him by 0.8 points. With McClung getting a 48.
Sorry, my French.
48.
Huh? 48
out of 50.
Not
bad.
He beat him for the round or overall? I'm not watching it. He won the championship?
Right now, Jaylen Brown leads after the first dunk by 0.8 points.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. I'm not watching so much.
Right,
wait a second. What?
Yeah, right now the top two are Jaylen Brown and Mac McClung.
Nice. I know Mac had an invite. He played a couple summer league seasons with the Sixers.
But it's kind of, I don't want to say it's sad, but like sports radio in New York, Nick, Steve, we're saying like, dude, like, how can you have, you know, a dunk championship with, you know, not even NBA players? That makes it a little bit, you know, watered down. Kind of like ordering a drink and it's all water. It's like, okay, well, it's kind of like not the real thing.
No, I even agree. Have, like, you know, why are you calling it the NBA slam dunk competition when you have a guy that isn't even, oh, that's a bad miss. That's a bad miss by Yaquez. You know, it's like, how can you call it an actual, an NBA slam dunk competition when at least one of your competitors isn't even on an NBA roster?
Right.
That's just a little bit weak. And I love the fact that he's there, but it's like, it makes it a little bit weird.
Yeah. I mean, right now he plays for the Orlando Magic G League team.
Oh, yeah. Isn't the G League Ignite?
No, not the Ignite. I forget the name of it. I forget, but it's like, it's basically the Orlando Magic. Like, the team name is the Magic, but it's not Orlando. It's, I forget the actual name of it. And 46.8 for Yaquez's second attempt. Yaquez, that's probably it for him.
Yeah.
The top two dunkers obviously advanced to the finals. For this. And, yeah, I mean, you know, long gone are the days where you would see, like, Nate Robinson, Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
You know, actual, I mean, Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine, you know, long gone are the days where you would you'd see actual stars in dunk competitions. Because the thing is, you know, a lot of them, even though LeBron has said for years that he's wanted to do a dunk contest, a lot of them, you know, they really just want to sit around, essentially. They want to sit around and enjoy the week. They don't want to actually go out there and have to participate until the All-Star game.
Olascola Magic, I think it's pronounced, Steve. Yes, Scola.
Yeah, Luis Scola?
Olascola, I think it's how it's pronounced.
The Olascola, yeah.
Olascola, yes.
Yeah, the Olascola Magic.
Olascola Magic.
Yeah, that's who Mac McClung plays for the G League.
Good player, though.
And
I think we got to give the second credit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you do have to give him some credit. Honestly, you know, I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't been able to hang around on a on an NBA team, even as a bottom feeder bench player.
I put him on the bench, but hey, bench players can be good too.
47.2 for Toppin on that second dunk, and I'm telling you right now, a lot of these judges are really scoring based off of, do they make it on the first attempt?
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll tell you right now, that dunk that Toppin just did is a lot better than a 47.2.
What do they know?
But. You know, a lot of these scores are based on, can you get it done with the first dunk? And I'll tell you right now, if Mac McClung had gotten that done, had gotten his first dunk done on the first attempt, that probably would have been a 50.
Different score. Totally based off of different levels, like you said.
I mean, he was lucky he even got a 48 in his first attempt, or his first dunk, considering he missed it on the first attempt. Ooh. Oh yeah, that's gotta be a 50.
Who is that?
That's gotta be a 50 by Mac. That's gotta be a 50.
Hey, Dodge, you're still there. Devil's doing good.
Oh, here we go.
I mean, he looked like he was going forward, and then all of a sudden he switched it around to do the reverse dunk. It looked like it was just going to be a straightforward, just regular dunk, and then all of a sudden he completely did a 180 in midair. That's got to be a 50. No, they gave him a 49. Okay, 49.4.
Okay.
One of the other things that I was going to bring up for the NHL, the Columbus Blue Jackets, they have fired their general manager, Jarmo Kekäläinen, during his 11th season at the helm of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Why not? You're horrible anyway.
And, I mean, they're horrible to begin with, but Kekäläinen, I mean, he has really, like, I'm kind of surprised he made it 11 seasons, because he's really blown quite a bit of, he's blown quite a bit of big teams that they've had.
Yeah.
But so it says here that the hockey operations team will assume GM duties on an interim basis until they can hire a full-time replacement. Kekäläinen, he was also in the headlines following the complete botching of the Mike Babcock hiring. For anybody who remembers what happened there with Babcock sharing, looking into his players' photos.
Yeah, the bad bomb hiring. Totally bomb.
Yeah.
That was a terrible hiring.
Yeah, that was on Kekäläinen. So instead they named Pascal Vincent as the not bad Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
Had a lob from Jason Tatum while dunking over a sitting Kai Sennett. I think that's how you say his name. While dunking over a sitting Kai Sennett and getting a lob from Jason Tatum, that should be enough to advance him, I would assume.
Yes.
But Kekäläinen. Only Doug Armstrong of the St. Louis Blues and Winnipeg's Kevin Cheveldayoff had been in a GM post in the league longer than Kekäläinen before Kekäläinen got officially fired this past week.
Yeah.
Kekäläinen, I mean, he's just had problems ever since COVID came around and everything. He's had problems. I mean, we'll just start off. Columbus reached the playoffs in his first full season at the helm in 2013-2014. He fired head coach Todd Richards 7 games and 7 losses into the 2015-2016 season and replaced him with John Tortorella, who then guided the Blue Jackets to 4 consecutive postseason appearances, which was the longest sustained stretch of success since they came into the league. They then parted ways with Tortorella in 2021, and Kekäläinen then hired Brad Larsen and fired him 2 lackluster seasons later. Obviously, the Babcock fiasco. And after Babcock was, after that was reversed, they then brought in Vincent, who had been an understudy to Brad Larsen. And through the first 52 games, the Blue Jackets have won only 16. And star players such as Johnny Gaudreau have been benched late in games under Vincent. And it sounds like more significant changes beyond just the firing of Kekalainen could be coming when the regular season ends in April.
Well, damn right.
So
there should be plenty of games coming.
Yeah.
Shake down straight.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Underperforming, you know, shake it up. You know,
right.
100,000 players coming up, you know, from Boston to, you know, Alabama that are trying to get in there. They have no time to waste on people, a roster or a coaching staff that's not fully into it. So, yeah, shake it up.
By the way, the finals officially, it will be Mac McClung versus Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown just barely snuck through.
Lou,
but,
Lou,
yeah,
you sound,
I mean, looking where
Lou, you sound overwhelmed with joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just imagine that. Imagine having a G Leaguer beat one of the NBA stars for the second straight year.
Yeah. How about that? Whippersnapper.
I mean, it's bad enough that, you know, they may as well just get rid of the dunk competition if they don't want, you know, if
yeah.
nobody's interested in doing dunks anymore.
Of course.
Right.
But anyways, looking at the NHL standings right now where they stand, in the Eastern Conference, first off, the Atlantic Division, the Florida Panthers, they have bypassed the Bruins 36-15-4 for 76 points, 1 point ahead of the 32-12-11 Boston Bruins. The Toronto Maple Leafs at 29-16-8, good for 66 points. They currently occupy the final guaranteed playoff spot in the Atlantic Division among the top three. Just 1 point ahead of the Tampa Bay Lightning with 65 points, the Red Wings with 62, the Buffalo Sabres with 52, also Montreal with 52, and the Ottawa Senators with 46. Expect Ottawa to be heavy sellers at the deadline coming up in 2 weeks. Over in the Metropolitan Division, the New York Rangers lead the way with 35-16-3 record, good for 73 points. The Carolina Hurricanes are next up with 31-17-5, good for 67 points. The Philadelphia Flyers still hanging in there, 29-19-7 for 65 points. They are locked in right now as the number three seed of the Metropolitan Division, 7 points ahead of the New Jersey Devils, who currently have 58. The
right.
New York Islanders, they have 57, followed by the Capitals with 56, the Pittsburgh Penguins with 55, and the Columbus Blue Jackets with 42. And another thing, too, I think it's a big mistake for Columbus to not be sellers. And more in particular, Jenner, who a lot of people are suspecting would be sold. It sounds like Columbus is planning on holding on to him, which I think may be a mistake on their part.
I think it would be.
Over in the Western Conference, you have the Dallas Stars in the Central Division leading the way with 75 points with a 34-14-7 record. 5 points ahead of the Colorado Avalanche, who have 70, followed by the Winnipeg Jets with 69. That takes up the top three for the Central Division. Then next, you have the St. Louis Blues with 60 points, the Nashville Predators with 58. The Minnesota Wild with 56, the Arizona Coyotes with 50, and the middling Chicago Blackhawks with 33 points. I think it's safe to say Chicago, they got a long rebuild ahead.
Well,
so much
for
your rookie sensation, Connor Bernard.
Yeah, I mean, Bednar. They got the support, so, I mean, let's build. You know, there's a better way to build. You know, as long as there's no wrong way to build. If you have the building block, They got the number one guy, so.
Right.
Build a...
Well, you know, a lot of, I mean, you know, he was so hyped up, you know, on being the next big sensation, and Chicago still isn't, you know, producing any, you know, even remotely close to being a contender, or at least being in the playoffs.
But I mean, well, Lou, you guys, you know, definitely more of the hockey edge there. But like, you know, Lemieux or Gretzky, like early on, number one pick like that. I mean, are you expecting or hoping? Everyone's hoping, but like, are you expecting them right around, like, to turn them into a playoff team? Because I mean,
well,
it's
I mean,
a team sport. It's,
I mean,
it's a team sport.
It's so hyped up and everything. So you know, I was just thinking how you know. And if you're just producing the same results, you haven't done much. And the same thing with Victor Wembanyama. You know, he was so hyped up and thinking the Spurs were going to be contenders, and so far they've been nothing but pretenders.
Look,
and a horrible way, too.
No one expects the contenders, though, the Spurs. Come on, man. He's 19 years old from France. I mean, they're going lottery again. But, I mean, I respect you, Lou, as always. You're a great host, you know, too, with your show. But, like, it's always an interesting question. I mean, when you have the number one pick, do you expect those guys to instantly turn it around? It's got to be more of a rebuild, like 2 or 3 or 4 years out.
Hmm. You think that long?
Yeah.
You're hoping to improve, not take a step backwards.
No, but I think the Spurs are going to, like, they're going to have a couple other lottery picks and rebuild, like Duncan and Robinson.
Hmm.
You know, hockey, I think it, you know, with a guy like that, I mean, you can't draft him at 18 years old and expect them to make the playoffs. 18-year-old.
Yeah.
18-year-old.
Like, we can't expect a rebirth of, say, like when David Robinson went with the Spurs. So I guess you can't look at it that way.
There you go. I agree.
Nice wipeout there, McClung. Nice wipeout.
Get to the NBA,
Trying to stack two people on top of each other with one of them holding the ball, and he basically just bricked the first attempt. He got the second attempt, but I think that's going to cost him.
Yeah.
Now, what you were saying, though, about Connor Bedard, I'll put it this way. He's doing a lot better than Alexis Lafreniere did his first year.
Oh, yeah.
With New York, when, you know, everybody was expecting Lafreniere to be a megastar, and so far he's turned out to be anything but that.
A bust.
With the New York Rangers.
Yeah. I could do that.
So, I mean, we also have to keep in mind too that Bedard has been injured part of the year as well.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah, I mean,
you hype these players up so much, and then, you know, somebody has, like, an injury, or they're just not performing, you know, it's really disheartening to, you know, see a so hyped up player, you know, go down so quickly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it just, you also have to keep in mind that you have to look at his surrounding cast and who he's surrounded with there in Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Taylor Hall, who was supposed to be their big acquisition this offseason, you know, has been injured. Taylor Hall was injured throughout most of the start of the season. And apart from that, I mean, you don't really have – you have, like, a bunch of utility players, I would almost call them. You know, Anthony Beauvillier, who's been, like, more of a third-line, fourth-line winger – previously with the Islanders, Andreas Athanasiou, kind of the same thing. You know, and Athanasiou has only played like 11 games this year.
Yeah.
So
he's a veteran player.
I mean,
too.
they have a weak, you know, a weak surrounding cast for Bedard.
Yeah.
Is he really he's wearing the Michael Jackson glove? Jaylen Brown just put on the Michael Jackson glove.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are we going to see like a moonwalk in midair or something?
I'm not allowed to watch it. I can't watch it right now. I'm walking the streets like Bruce Springsteen in the streets of Philadelphia.
Oh boy.
I'm walking around on the street. It's okay. I got my ear pierced in. I'm all good.
Yeah, well, cover me, okay?
Ah!
Well, that was a pretty good dunk, but I don't think that's a 50. McClung leads Brown by .2. So I don't know though. If Brown gets a 50 on this, I think McClung would have to be basically almost flat out perfect in order to beat him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, going back to the Blackhawks, you take a look at his support system there. I mean, you got guys like Ryan Donato, Jason Dickinson, Colin Blackwell. Oh, 49, 40, not bad, 49.2.
Yeah.
For Jaylen Brown. You know, you got basically a whole bunch of depth players, if anything, for Chicago. You can't expect a talent like I don't even think Connor McDavid would excel with this type of talent around him.
No, probably
if you're
not.
If you're coming to the league at 19 years old, is anyone realistically expecting them to be like a seventh seed or a, you know, win 40 games? No. Dude, he's one of the youngest guys in the league. Let's give him a year or two.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, I think what will be interesting is these first two seasons, specifically in the off season, what does Chicago do? What does Chicago do to try and put together, you know, an actual competitive team around him?
Yeah, it's going to be crucial.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so Mac McClung needs a 49.1 in order to beat Jaylen Brown.
Give me 5 seconds. I was going to say, compared to basketball, five-man game, football, like Mahomes can or Brady can turn it around. Dude, hockey, you have three or four lines. That's like 15, 18, 20, 22 people. It takes a lot more in 1 year. For an 18-year-old, there's no Kobe Bryant coming in, getting that team into the playoffs the first year. There is no Kobe Bryant. There's no LeBron James. It takes a little bit. It takes 2 or 3 years. Let the kid cook.
Well, I don't know, though. I mean, there was, you know, Connor McDavid. If you bring in a guy like Connor McDavid who immediately puts up 100-point seasons,
yeah.
You know, it really all depends.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if they're contenders this first year, but, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. I don't think you can vault a basement team into the playoffs with one 18-year-old, 19-year-old in the NHL, but in the NBA you can.
Oh, my God, McClung cleared Shaq.
Yeah.
Yep, there we go. Mac McClung just won with the first perfect score of the night. Go figure. So congratulations, NBA. You have once again a G leaguer beating out one of your best stars for the slam dunk title. Congratulations, NBA.
Adam Silver is smiling as long as he makes money. He is smiling. Silver smile. The silver smile.
And yet this guy can't even make an NBA roster. But he can win a dunk competition.
Why not?
Probably because he sucks.
With a performance like that, I don't know. I think somebody should get him.
I think the Knicks sign him as a third-string point guard, but they won't.
Yeah.
I'm just typing something out in Sports Whispers right now. Is literally embarrassing. When you have a player from the G League beat out some of your top stars for the second straight year. I mean, that's embarrassing.
That's got to say something. That's got to say something, too.
Yeah. And now, let's see. Where was I with the NHL? The Pacific Division. You have the Vancouver Canucks on top, 37-12-6 with 80 points. The Vegas Golden Knights are in second with 68 points. The Edmonton Oilers in third with 65. With their win over the Boston Bruins today, the LA Kings move up to 62 points. The Seattle Kraken with 56. The Calgary Flames with 55. The Anaheim Ducks with 40. And the San Jose Sharks, they are in a race right now for the number one overall pick between them and the Blackhawks. With 35 points. The Blackhawks have 33 points. So.
There we go.
Needless to say. I'll tell you one thing, though. If Chicago can get back-to-back number one overall picks, we saw what it did for Edmonton eventually. Edmonton had that string of off seasons where they got the number one overall pick multiple times in a row, and you know some people to believe that the draft lottery was rigged. Kind of like what the NBA did with Cleveland a couple of years. You know, depending on, and if I recall correctly, Macklin Celebrini is supposed to be a pretty big talent coming out of Boston University this year.
Yeah.
You know, he's right now listed as the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
And. I mean, playing for the USHL last year, he had 46 goals and 40 assists. So I don't know what he's going to do this year or what he has done so far this year for Boston University. But I think it's definitely, if you pair him up with Connor McDavid. Well, actually, let me see. What is Celebrini? Is he primarily a center, or does he play? Because he's a forward, so I guess he can play. He can play either wing or even center. So, I mean, if you pair him up with Connor or with Connor Bedard. You know, it's possible that they could have two key building blocks. Okay, so far through 28 games with Boston University, he has 23 goals and 20 assists for 43 points. And right now he's playing in the Beanpot, the Beanpot tournament coming up. So,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, those are numbers I would expect coming out of you know, coming from a star prospect, and plus, not to mention, in the World Juniors, he had 4 goals and 4 assists in 5 games. So, yeah, I would say that, you know, if they potentially win the draft lottery once again, the Blackhawks, and they get Celebrini to pair up with Connor McDavid or with Connor Bedard, those are two key building blocks that they'll have moving forward. All right. Now moving on to Major League Baseball. Jesus. You know, I have a bone to pick with the Boston Red Sox. It's bad enough that their owner doesn't give a shit whatsoever about you know, putting together a contender anymore.
Yeah.
I will say I do like the deal that they made. I like the deal that they made sending John Schreiber to the Kansas City Royals for pitching prospect David Sandlin, who's basically, that's exactly what he is. He's a prospect. He's not somebody that's going to see the majors this year. And the only reason why I like this is because you weren't going to see John Schreiber put up another season like he did in 2022, fully healthy. So they end up getting Kansas City's fifth best prospect in David Sandlin, who maybe potentially under under this new pitching regime that they that Craig Breslow is building here, that maybe perhaps he can develop into from what I've read, his floor is a good reliever, his ceiling is a starter. So I don't know. Problem is, he hasn't really pitched much in pro ball. He's basically been playing in single A or any of the higher A leagues.
It's a classic upside thing, which is what they're doing now more and more. So it's funny. The Mets are doing the same. I call it bullshit. I don't know what you smell it as. I smell bullshit. But they're signing low impact, like low salary guys on really short-term, no-risk deals to try to prove it, just to get by, it's the antithesis, the opposite of big market spending.
Yeah,
like the Mets just signed G-Man Choi. Are you kidding me? It was a cartoon character from the Rays 3 years ago. The Mets think he's going to – the Mets had Vogelback last year. Embarrassing. No big market team should ever have that guy in the lineup every day. I'm just flabbergasted.
You know, I do kind of feel, though, that this is different in Boston's situation, Alex, because the fans know it's abundantly clear that you're not contending this year. They would say that the number one weakness for their prospect pool has been pitching. So you bring in somebody you bring in somebody like Craig Breslow to sort of try and rebuild, like somebody who has an emphasis on pitching. And while I don't agree with the lack of moves that Boston has made this offseason, I don't mind this type of deal because I look at it like this. They're selling high on John Schreiber because there's no way in hell that they were going to get the same amount of production out of Schreiber that they got out of him in 2022. So even though he's under contract until 2027, it's better to sell high on him now as opposed to, like, dealing him at the deadline, for example.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yes.
Now make. Yep. It's just amazing now.
So
two of the biggest markets, at least, you know, the Sox have a much better tradition than Mets. I'm not trying to, you know, sugarcoat stuff about
right.
Mets, but, you know, they both are major markets, and it's interesting. They're both kind of pinching pennies. And it's like, come on,
right.
Make it make sense to the common fan. I mean, and Lou, you're sitting over there. You got, you know, Lou Gehrig, you know, Joe DiMaggio, Derek Jeter, and they're still spending money.
Yeah.
Now, you know, after Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz, Steve, your team's not spending money now. You know, the Mets are like,
oh, yeah, I know.
And the Mets aren't spending money, and I'm just like, come on, man.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating to see, you know, after all of these seasons, and you have a brain dead owner like John Henry, who's basically decided, no, I'm done with getting extra profit from the postseason, from appearing in the postseason. Instead, I'm just happy with. I'm happy with, just getting regular revenue. So, literally, this is how pathetic it is that their biggest signing was Lucas Giolito.
Yeah. I also love Tyler O'Neill. O'Neill's great. He's going to hit.
Yeah, O'Neill was a pretty good pickup.
Yes.
I agree with that, Alex. O'Neill was a pretty good pickup. I'm waiting to see, though, what he's going to be like. Not what he's going to be like, but how this outfield situation is going to resolve itself. Because right now, you have a logjam in the outfield, and apparently they're talking about bringing back Adam Duvall while also trying to trade Jaron Duran.
Oh, are you kidding me?
So
I like Duvall.
Yeah.
Duvall's 36, ready. Duran's jacked, supreme athlete, athletically, range, base running. Are you kidding me? Why would they ever trade Duran?
Well, their thing.
They're trying to save
their
money
thing
because
with Duran,
Duran's going to demand a contract in 2 years.
Well, their thing with Duran is that they don't think that he will be able to. I mean, you're probably right in that aspect, but also at the same time, they look at Duran and they're probably thinking that he's not going to be able to keep up the level of. The level of production that he put up this year.
Well, it can't hit lefties.
It's like they think that
that's
this season was like a flash in the pan.
It can't hit lefties. That's going to be a problem. Overall, the guy's incredibly talented. So, I mean, if I were a GM, if I had Duran, I'd be like, wow, this guy's, I'm going to build around this guy. But you also have really other talented outfielders, you, me, and Lou, spoken about, several weeks. Rafaela, they have three or four really good, obviously Yoshida. I mean, I would keep Duran. Would you trade Duran?
I would only trade Duran if the price is right.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean if we get absolutely blown away by an offer. That's the only way I would trade him away.
Yeah. It's interesting. The guy.
But
really
it's going to take a lot for them to get blown away by an offer, though, I think.
It's interesting. I mean, it's interesting. Look at him. He hasn't even started his career in Boston. Yeah, I mean, they're going to trade him from scratch. He's just, getting warmed up. Dangerous moves. I mean,
right.
if I wouldn't trade him. I'd wait 2 or 3 years, see if he grows.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I agree, especially if you're looking at a team that's not really going to be a contender. You know, if you're looking at a team that you're like, oh, we're just going to basically we don't see this team going anywhere anytime soon. You know, at that point, I would be like, okay, well, then why are we, thinking about even trading somebody like Duran when we could basically use these next 2 years as an opportunity to sort of, you know, measure him to see what type of player he could potentially become. The only thing that makes me wonder is I'm wondering if they're looking at if they're looking at this past season and they're basically saying, yeah, we're not going to see the same offensive output out of him moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking through my goggles or, you know, Lou's or anyone. I mean, okay, so this guy's, you know, 6'3", really built physically. So that shows massive power upside. He's very fast. Got a gun for an arm. He's a lefty, right? So he's got to overcome the, you know, his lefty-lefty
right.
splits are not ideal. But, like, dude, that's a blue chip, I would say a blue chip prospect, right? If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
Right.
How do you, when you're rebuilding, how would you try to peddle that guy off? Shouldn't that be guy?
Yeah.
That guy should be part of the plan. He could turn into like a 30 guy. I think. I mean, he's very physically gifted. Unless he's doing something where, like,
right.
I don't know, like in the dugout, if he's yelling at people or sleeping with someone's wife. I think that guy on the surface is a very talented guy I want on my team. If I'm rebuilding, he's the perfect guy to, like, rebuild with. He could be 30, 40. We don't know. Maybe they know something. I mean, that guy should be
one of the
building blocks of the Red Sox. He should be one of the pillars.
I agree. He should be somebody that they should really keep – that, you know, that they could really build around. You know, you want to talk about the young core that's coming up. You know, him, Rafaela, Abreu, Casas, Grissom, who they just got from the Braves. You know, these are the type of guys that you would want to build around. But, you know, I just have this weird feeling. So,
well, you know,
that,
you know what it is? I have the same weird feeling, Steve. They can sense who's going to demand big money now. Now you're getting into the you're not only shifting from big market to penny pitching. Now you're going to see your GM and your owner. They're going to let people go because they're going to demand too much money in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And they're going to explain
that's what sucks about it.
Yeah, they didn't fit. Well, no. Keep owners.
Yeah, that's what sucks about it, too, is that,
yeah.
you know, all they care about is they basically care about selling fans on the Fenway experience.
As opposed to
actually giving a shit and, you know, putting together a meaningful contender.
Well, the reality is they don't.
It's unfortunate, but that's really what we're looking at right now, if anything.
Like Frank said.
Yeah.
Like Frank said, that's life. Yeah, I mean that's
hello.
Yeah.
They're not even pulling a fast one over you guys. Like Steve, you and Jim, you guys are smart fans. You can see it, tension and screwing everyone over. Ridiculous.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like don't try to play me. Don't play me. I can already see it.
Yeah, it seriously is. When you just look at the fact that literally their number one signing this year was Lucas Giolito, a guy who would be a number five starter on any other team.
I'm not laughing. I'm laughing with you. I'm also laughing, though.
Yeah.
Giolito, come on.
King of the joke, really.
Right.
But 6 ERA. He's got a bigger ERA than Motley Crue. More than, you know, Tommy Lee. No, I mean, yeah. He's throwing softballs. They're really trying to pull one over on the fans. They're not legit. They're not acting legit. They should be, but they're not.
Right.
And they still have a lot of talent, too. But the pitching, I mean, the pitching staff in the pen, that's going to be a kick.
I mean, they have one player. They have Jordan Montgomery sitting out there for the taking on the free agent market. And I say that because the Rangers have mentioned that they do not expect any further additions this offseason. So right now,
wow,
what that tells me is they're not planning on re-signing Montgomery. You have Montgomery sitting there on the market waiting to be grabbed, waiting to be snagged up.
Yeah.
Why are you not jumping on him the first opportunity you get? And the obvious answer is because John Henry doesn't give a shit. That means John Henry would have to spend money.
Hey, sorry. I'm John Henry's assistant. He's on a yacht right now. Would you like to talk to him?
No.
No. I told him to go fuck himself, but pardon my French. Yeah, no, he's
I was just looking at John Schreiber's contract. You can't even call this a salary dump because Schreiber was only making $1.1 million. So it's not like this is a salary dump at all by Boston. To me, this just screams that they were selling high on him as opposed to his value coming down. If he has a bad season this year, they want to sell high on him and try to rebuild the pitching farm while they still have the chance to. However, though, it sounds like Chris Martin and Kenley Jansen may still be on the trademark or may still be on the trade block.
Oh, good. They just signed them. Oh, yeah. We want to trade them. What are they doing? They're literally saying we want to trade Kenley Jansen. Wow. Okay. This is like the antithesis. How to not win a World Series. Okay. So keep going.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous with what they're. I mean, right now
what are they doing?
If they want to get rid of salary, then obviously they would trade Kenley Jansen like right now.
Of course, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because he takes up about $16 million. So, but. I kind of look at it like this. I think what they're probably going to do is they're probably going to do what Chaim Bloom refused to do, which was wait until the deadline. And because it's very likely that they'll be able to get something significant for either Jansen or Martin at the deadline.
Of course.
Because there are going to be teams that will be calling.
You have to get something for him.
Yeah.
I'm amazed.
That's what I would expect.
God. Man. No, I mean, Steve, I love you guys. You have to be so – you and Jim and company have to be so enraged. It's total 180 from when you guys were, like, in the driver's seat winning those rings. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like – it's such a disgusting insult to like all the Red Sox fans. Wow.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely right about that. You know, it's very infuriating, you know, watching this team operate the way they are. Just knowing that there's so much more that they could do. I mean, like, for example, they let go of they refused to pay Xander Bogaerts, who, by the way, the Padres are moving him to second base now.
Second base.
In order for Ha-Seong Kim to take over at shortstop.
Yep.
You know, because Boston wouldn't pay Bogaerts $280 million, you know, that's one of the players that they let go. One of the parts of at the time was their young core, and
sure.
You know, he was basically going to be the veteran for this new round of Red Sox young talent.
Hey Steve, as far as young leadership, Devers was Bogaerts more of a leader? Like one-on-one, Devers or Bogaerts? Which one would you rather be like?
I would definitely say Bogaerts.
Really?
Yeah.
I never asked you that. So, like, more like got along well with the team? You know what I mean? Like, he's got to be a leader.
Yeah.
I would definitely say Bogaerts. Now, obviously, once Bogaerts left, obviously Devers became the leader of the team by necessity.
De facto.
Yeah. He became the de facto leader, so to speak. Once Bogaerts didn't re-sign. But
does Devers have leadership qualities, or is he just like a put his head down and hit 300?
I mean, you could kind of say that, I guess.
Why?
You know, he's one of those type of guys, I guess you could say. But
any leader,
you know, I would definitely still look at, I mean, Devers was gonna reach that point at some point, you know, where ultimately he would probably take over as in a leadership role of some kind.
Yeah, and he should deservedly.
Yeah. So I mean, it was only a matter of time before that would happen. Now, obviously. You know, nobody expected that he would have to do it right away because Boston management would basically decide, well, screw it. We don't need, we don't need to contend anymore.
Yeah.
You know, nobody was expecting that right off the bat. So, I mean, it's just unfortunate. With how this team was basically set for the future. This team was set. All they had to do was, you know, just pay your players. That's all you had to do. And Boston would be seen as playoff contenders for the last couple seasons and then the future. And John Henry would be getting that extra profit from being in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just mind-numbing, honestly.
Yes.
It really is. Oh,
by the way, Rob Manfred, it looks like Rob Manfred will not seek another term as MLB commissioner. So once January of 2029 hits, apparently that will be when they will seek the next commissioner.
Yeah. You sure heard my reaction when I told him this? I'm not sure I think you left, but, you know, I was actually praising his stepping down.
Well, I think that it would be that it would be the best thing possible for baseball because ever since Bud Selig retired, Manfred has been fucking horrible.
Yes.
It's been terrible.
I mean, he's I mean, he's received the approval of club owners throughout his time as commissioner, but I mean, during his tenure, he's made rule changes aimed at speeding up the pace of the game, tampering with the composition of baseballs, expanding the postseason. He had to deal with the Astros sign stealing scandal, the pandemic, the lockout in 2021, 2022.
That's ruined
it. And now the Athletics' problem with Vegas.
Yeah, or they'll just stay in Oakland. But that means no one will go to the game.
Yeah, I mean, also another thing, too, that fans got pissed off at the fact that no players received any punishment for the sign-stealing scandal from Manfred. And also that Manfred referred to the World Series trophy as a piece of metal.
Okay,
that
now you're going
basically, I mean, he hasn't been, put it this way, he can't hold a candle to Bud Selig, basically.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy that, yeah, he called it a piece of metal. He called the World Series trophy a piece of metal.
Okay, now he's taking it way too far.
And, I mean, you know, this is a guy that he could probably say that he's been a lifelong baseball fan, and you probably wouldn't believe it.
I don't believe it.
By
you're
the
right.
way that he acts. But, I mean, you know, just regardless, he's just dealt with so much shit during his during his time as commissioner since taking over in 2014. But it's needless to say, you know, out of all the commissioners, you know, he's so bad that, you know how people used to hate Roger Goodell? People hate Rob Manfred right now more than they hate Roger Goodell.
Wow. Interesting.
I mean, I think that says something. The fact that,
for a different mother.
Yeah. And by the way, Manfred, he beat out Red Sox chairman Tom Werner. Tom Werner was the other candidate to become the new commissioner at the time.
Okay.
But it was basically essentially, to vote on a new commissioner, it would require 23 out of 30 owners to vote for a certain person. And the initial vote was a 22-8 split, missing it by one vote, essentially, for Manfred.
Interesting.
But, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, I guess we could almost say good riddance when it comes to him.
Bye-bye. Of course, yeah. Don't let the door even end the way to the end. Come on.
Oh, it will.
Yeah.
Get him out.
Let's see. One of the other pieces of information to come out this week, the San Francisco Giants, they have come to terms on a 3-year, $42 million deal with Red Sox target Jorge Soler. Yeah, that's another guy you can add to the list of the interest kings. In Boston there. It sounds like he will serve primarily as the DH, and it looks like this will mean that Wilmer Flores will be moving around that outfield quite a lot.
It's interesting.
Although
that
it sounds like...
Steve, I was,
yeah, that's right.
Say
he was a former Met, right?
Yeah, of course. And then, you know, Soler, and then you have Crawford. The Giants haven't had a good lineup in, you know, 5 or 10 years. So, I mean, Soler, I think
might add some thump, but they also signed that Japanese center fielder, which could be good, but I don't know. They're chasing their shadow. They're chasing San Diego and L.A. Both have much better lineups. Tough spot in the NL West.
Also, speaking of the National League, in Colorado, they will be without one of their relievers, Daniel Bard, who is expected to open the season on the injured list with a torn meniscus in his left knee.
Yeah,
it says here. It kind of sucks for him with him being 38 years old. You know, his body's starting to break down. It seemed unlikely to begin with that he would even really be in the running for the closing position out in Colorado, but still a pretty significant blow to them for their bullpen. The Padres, they have also welcomed back Jerickson Profar with a one-year, $1 million deal with an extra $1.5 million in incentives based on plate appearances after finishing last season between the Rockies and the Padres, hitting .242 with 9 homers and 46 RBI. Basically, he will operate as a super utility player off the bench, though it sounds like he could become a potential starting outfielder as San Diego looks to revamp that their entire team, quite frankly. Let's see. Also, the Pittsburgh Pirates have agreed to a contract with Yasmani Grandel. I did not get the actual terms of the deal, but it says here it's a major league deal worth $2.5 million. So I assume it's probably for 1 year. He hit 8 homers with a .234 batting average for the White Sox last year. Although he was one of the game's best catchers from 2015 to 2021, he was considered to be one of the worst catchers in 2022.
Weren't we all? I was about to say,
yeah.
That's one of the Pirates are one of my sleeper teams. Dude, you guys remember, their best shortstop, 6'7", O'Neill Cruz. This guy's going to be like the next Ella, Dela, whatever, the Cincinnati guy. He's coming back next year. I love them. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I like the Pirates to kind of be a wild card team, maybe. It's also McCutcheon's last year. You're like, whatever.
They also have the
number one pick, Paul Skenes. They're promoting their number one pick last year to the big leagues right now from LSU. 6'6", ace. Like, I'm kind of thinking Pirates might make a move. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, that wouldn't be surprising if they were to try to make a move of some sort. I wouldn't be surprised, considering the fact that, you know, they have made strides over the last couple of seasons. However, though, I mean, if they were going to make a move, though, I would think that they probably would have wanted to do it. They would have wanted to do it, I feel, before the start of spring training.
Yeah. I just think they're kind of poised. I think they might be a good team for the wild card this year.
Yeah, they could, specifically depending on how they start the year. I don't know. I've kind of got a weird feeling specifically about this season. I think it's possible we could see a little bit of weirdness happen throughout the league. Don't be surprised if we see a couple of how sometimes some seasons we see the league get completely flipped on its side.
It's derriere coming around. Before you were trumping the horn about, oh, it's Dodgers. I said, don't be surprised. Someone else is going to knock him off.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it'll be the Dodgers. I think we'll start to see, though, some teams sort of sneak their way in, though.
Represent. Yeah.
Right.
And you guys see that. It's a condensed series in, two of three or three of five. Dude, if there's a couple pitchers that go on fire, the Pirates can sweep the Dodgers. Will that happen? No. Did it happen? Maybe. I mean, anything's possible. It's different than MLB. It's different than, NBA. If you have a series, if you have a couple aces, anything can happen. Don't give the Dodgers a ring yet. They haven't earned it yet. There's no rings there.
The Miami Marlins, they have acquired infielder/outfielder Nick Gordon from the Minnesota Twins in exchange for left-handed pitcher Stephen Okert. After spending three seasons with the Twins, Gordon goes to Miami where his brother, D. Strange Gordon, made a name for himself in the mid-2010s. Gordon last year appeared in 34 games for the Twins after a breakout 2022 season, and he should be in the mix for regular season at-bats with the Marlins this year. Okert, meanwhile, spent the last 3 years in Miami posting a 3.51 ERA during his tenure in that bullpen. So now he will look to carve out a role as a middle reliever for the AL Central champion Minnesota Twins. Which, ultimately, I guess is a pretty good trade on both sides. Miami, though, it kind of seems like they've taken a couple of steps backwards when it comes to players after nearly making the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and Steve, it was confusing last week. I didn't mean to say it like we were confused about But I really think, the identity, at least with Pat Riley, right, with this early team, it was defense. So I think right now it's kind of confused. Terry Rozier, he's a volume guard, right? He'll score 21, but they'll shoot 6 of 18. He's not going to play great defense, so I don't think it mixes that. So I don't think Miami's a playoff team right now. A contender.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. But not just there, but also when it comes to when it comes to the Marlins as well. I don't think I would see them as a playoff contender either.
No.
A lot of that is, marketability. I mean, you're out there in Miami on the beach. There's a lot of people having fun. Yeah, they'll throw money and go to a game. There's not hardcore fans out there. There's too much shit to do.
Right.
Plus, there's a lot of people that are, whatever you call it. They'll go there, and then in the winter, they're back. People from Boston, New York, Jersey, everywhere. It's not the same out there. The fandom is just not there. The Raiders can't even build their own stadium. So, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's like I've said before that it's so weird how you go, Florida, and for some reason, hockey is much more popular down there than like football or baseball or even basketball. It's just so weird.
It's
like
It's interesting.
Yes.
It really
you
is
know,
fun.
For, I mean, I jokingly call it Retirement Village, but it's like you expect them to be more fans of baseball, especially when you consider that Florida is a major part of spring training as well.
Oh, it's a staple. It's the blueprint. It's the like backbone of MLB baseball. Well, like yeah, like you know, when someone gets drafted, the kid's like, oh, to the dad, oh yeah, I'm going in Clearwater or St. Petersburg. You know, Florida's the hub for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and yet you have a team like the Tampa Bay Rays, or even, and I'll even put the Miami Marlins in this category a little bit as well, that literally struggle to even fill a, you know, to even fill a stadium. I mean, it's really amazing just to see how a state that's supposed to be very heavily baseball related, and instead they, you know, they can barely attract anybody for baseball games.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And regardless of the passion of the people, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
It is.
It's really quite a quandary. Like it's ironic. It really is.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, before I we got about like 16 minutes left. I don't know why I didn't bring this up earlier, but Kansas City, the parade with what happened at the parade,
yeah,
where there was
oh,
a
God.
Shooting. There was a shooting at the Kansas City the parade for the Kansas City Chiefs that saw. What was it, Lou? Was it two people that got killed?
Three, but one was not involved directly in it. So I guess you can say two.
So two people dead and 22 others injured.
Yes.
And actually, there's been footage that has gone viral of fans tackling one of the shooters. Three people were arrested in connection with this.
Yeah.
And
ex-US Army guy tackled him with his wife. Yep. Tackled the kid.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could, you know, it's just, it's sad enough that, you know, people can't even enjoy a team's celebration anymore.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
like I mean, Steve, there's no other country you can carry around M16s and A35, whatever the fuck. I mean, come on, are you kidding me? It's
right.
Disgusting. I'm not going to say anything more. I mean, that is the most one of the U.S. right now is we're the only country who allows that. So yeah. I've said my part.
Yeah.
Oh no, I agree. I agree with you, Alex. The fact that we allow, and not just
military
that we allow it, the fact that there's actually people that are fighting to keep that right.
What the fuck? Pardon my French.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what is that? Yeah. Protect your what? Yeah. It's terrible.
Right.
It really upsets me, but whatever. What
and
can I do?
As a goodwill gesture from Taylor Swift, so basically there was a GoFundMe that was set up for one of the victims for $75,000, and Taylor Swift donated I think it was $100,000 to one of the victims of the tragedy, which at the time, this was the victim that was actually made known to the public, who was, I believe she was a radio DJ, I think, in Kansas City.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
And, I mean, it's just, this is just tragic all around. But, you know, I honestly, I couldn't even believe it when I saw it get reported. Like, I was in the middle of the afternoon at work, and I could not believe the reporting as I saw the message come across my phone.
Yes.
That there had actually been shots fired. And the thing that gets me, too, is they're trying to pass it off as gang-related, basically, that it was a dispute between two parties.
You know what that means,
in
right?
Regard, you know. Yes.
I can fill in the blank. You know what that means? Minorities shooting. You know what that means?
Yeah.
I just answered that, right?
Basically.
That's what they're trying to say. It doesn't matter who it was from. And furthermore, it's the sad thing is Steve and Lou and everyone, like, oh it's trans, it's gay, or it's black or white. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Everything that happens right now in our country is so polarized. So they want to define it as one thing, and everyone hates it. It's like, dude, look at the situation. It sucks. I think it was a couple guys that were talking to someone else, and they turned around and started spraying bullets. I hate that. But let's look at it for what it was. Jesus. Everything's so polarizing now. It's like, God.
No. Yeah, it's like somebody may have breathed on the other person the wrong way, and then all of a sudden, they decide to start throwing.
Yeah, it's MAGA or it's Biden or like it's nothing. Just deal with it. I'm just so sick of the whole political thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's still sad regardless though. It's sad
course,
regardless 100%. That it even. Yeah, that it even had to happen, such a senseless act of violence in this situation, especially when a parade is supposed to be a time for fans to celebrate along with the players.
Yeah, and kids, too. That's the big thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Kids, obviously, that's like their, you know, I don't know about you kids, but like growing up, when I was a kid, like, all right, like I met Randall Cunningham randomly when I was like 9 years old. Hooked for life. I mean, these kids, like, yeah, it's for the kids. It's not for the, you know, it's not for the 59-year-olds, you know, drinking Jack Daniels.
Right.
Walking on the curb. But like, he still has fun at the parade. You know what I'm saying? It's more for the kids.
Yeah.
And like, this destroyed
right.
that. To eradicate that and realize, you know, it's fine for the kids to go to parades. It's incredibly bad. This is the first pro championship shooting ever. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that's basically going to be etched in sports history, basically.
That's never happened.
No. I mean, you also
have a lot of MAGA, and you have a lot of, Taylor Swift. I'm just saying, people are going to start seeing that. Do I agree with that? No. But that's, you know,
right.
There's always bullshit commentary everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I fear that this isn't the last time that it's going to happen.
No, it's not.
Right, we can't prevent it.
Right. Yeah, you can't prevent it. That's the problem.
You could be the best, you know, defense in the world. You can't prevent anything.
No.
Whether that's CIA, you know, FBI, whatever. This wasn't terrorist either. It was literally, you know, a random guy spraying bullets, which is deplorable.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you prevent that in the future. I don't.
I don't think you can.
I don't think you can.
Not as long as people are able to openly carry weapons.
No.
Well, it's
America.
That's what I stopped doing.
Welcome to America. Yeah, you can carry weapons everywhere.
Right.
And then we wonder why
right.
things happen. Oh, why did that happen? Well, yeah.
Think
Jesus
about it, people. It brings to guns.
Only in America. I always said that.
Yeah.
I don't know, Jack, about much. All I know is it only happens in America. So why is that?
I don't know.
It just, you know, people have become so numb to it, you know, over the last however many years.
Yeah.
It upsets me, but, yeah. I mean, we got to keep going, but, I mean, the gun thing is just crazy, but I don't want to ever.
I agree.
Yes.
I'm sorry to keep saying that. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I kind of felt like I should bring it up because it was newsworthy, but at the same time, Steve,
talk about it. You know, me and Lou will talk about it. But, you know, I just didn't want to, like, go out of bounds and keep talking about it. But, yeah, I think it's disgusting.
Correct.
We're the only country ever who's ever had this problem. You know, it's just deplorable. But, you know, it keeps going.
Right.
What's next? You know, 5 years? We're going to have, 80 people shooting a Super Bowl? Like, we're the only country who deals with this. Cut it out.
Yeah, you know, I really hope it doesn't come to that. But, you know, considering how strict they are now with security and everything going into arenas or stadiums, but, you know, there is always that possibility that something could potentially sneak through. I mean, hell, that's how we still have granted it's completely different, but we still have streakers. You know, we had a streaker during the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Yuck.
But, I mean, he didn't get far, but still, you know, it just shows that, you know, we can still see God knows what, you know, at anywhere, not just sporting events. But I really hope that, you know, moving forward, you know, they can find a way to prevent stuff like, you know, what's probably going to happen if this wasn't the last parade for a sporting event that we will ever see, which, by the way, that was talked about on sports radio, whether or not that may actually happen. You know, I think moving forward, we may end up seeing, greatly increased security at not just events like this, but also other sporting events too.
Well, yeah, I mean, they jacked it up after 9/11. I agree with you, Steve, 100%. But like, they've jacked it up through the roof. I mean, you have snipers on the roof at the Sphere during the Super Bowl. There are people who know, like, what you're doing when you're eating popcorn, walking on the line.
Right.
There's recognition. There's FBI. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
Yes.
What I'm saying is there's no more security. I don't think in the next 10 years you can put on someone. There's a lot of face recognition. Like I said, you can walk into a casino.
Right.
You can walk into a Super Bowl at Vegas. If you did something, if you tried to steal a chip or got too drunk 20 years ago, they recognize your face. You're not allowed in the Super Bowl. It's very locked in. So,
oh yeah.
You know, no. I mean, I want more super security more than anyone. I'm just saying, there's already a really good job of doing that. I think security is not really the problem. I mean, can we get more? Yeah, I guess so. But it's more the people. You know, our country's there's a lot of turmoil. I don't know. Would you guys agree? Like,
right.
Security's pretty good.
Could be better, though.
Yeah, they've definitely heightened up enough security to begin with ever since 9/11. Ever since 9/11 happened, the big thing is, you just have to take a look at a whole bunch of other stuff that we're probably going to see potentially happen moving forward here. It's almost like what else more could they possibly do to prevent something like this from happening?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, God forbid something actually happens live during a game, you know, like on live TV and whatnot.
That'd be awful. Oh, God. Oh, it's a potential.
Yeah. It's like I can't even comprehend, you know, what we could possibly end up seeing with some of the idiots that, you know, that roam this country right now.
Yeah.
And I fear that we may not be that far off from seeing it potentially happen.
But yeah, I mean, right now,
I hope I'm wrong.
The most dangerous people right now are roaming very freely in the country.
Right.
So,